Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Okay. Good morning, Mo.
Morning. How are you?
I'm excellent. Yeah, I have my cup of tea. And I think we've been doing this now for well over 2 years. And just to remind the audience that the J was the journal and OE was Ortho Evidence. And today we're going to discuss sort of a change in the overall leadership of the journal and what the vision for the future is as we kind of exchange the baton, if you will. But I thought it might be worthwhile just to review a bit about how we individually came to be in contact with the journal. So for me, it was as a medical student when it became clear to me that orthopedic surgery was something I desired. And, you know, I had my home medical school was the University of Southern California, and there was journal clubs there. And then I rotated at the University of Washington and there were journal clubs there. And it was a gray journal published once a month, thick gray journal in print. But it quickly became apparent to me that this was the source of truth for the academic community. And what was published in that journal was highly valued and highly respected. Obviously, I completed a residency at the University of Washington. And thanks to an event that I have described publicly before, I got really interested in hip fractures because of experiences as a student and as a resident. And I was asked by then editor Harry Cowell to write a current concept. He'd been to an instructional course lecture I'd given as a very young faculty member at Vanderbilt and asked me to write it up. And I did that. And then shortly after that, I started getting manuscripts to review. They used to come in FedEx, big, thick, printed out manuscripts that you had to read. And then you had to get your review typed or do it yourself. And then you had to put it in a FedEx envelope and ship it back to the journal office. And after a few years of doing that, I got asked to be an associate editor, which I think the process is still pretty much the same, where if you do a really good job and are timely and do good reviews, the decision makers ask you to be an associate editor. So I did that. And then my career changed in 1989. I got really interested in outcomes research. And Dr. Cowell figured that this was a hot enough topic that he needed a deputy editor for those types of submissions that were coming through, patient-oriented outcomes, et cetera. So I did that for a while, and then things changed hands, and Jim Heckman became editor, and my involvement as a deputy editor continued, and then Berntolo came in. We had the fairly dramatic change of not having one individual be both the CEO and editor-in-chief, which Dr. Heckman had done. I think the trustees realized that the new world of scholarly publication was not one that, you know, scholars and orthopedic surgeons were well equipped. And so they hired Kent Anderson to be the first CEO when Vern became the editor-in-chief, and the split roles continued. And I think that's been a very important decision to allow the journal to survive. So, and then when Vern decided he was going to step down, I was asked to apply, and the trustees, I hope, feel they made a wise decision. We'll see what they say at the meeting next week. But so that's my story with the journal. So what's your story with the journal, Mo?
So funny. In some ways, it's like, you know, obviously we were in different parts of the world at the time. And I was also a medical student. I decided probably, it sounds like you did as well, pretty early on, like it was my first or second elective. And I think I've also publicly talked about my first elective being with Robin Richards at St. Michael's Hospital. And it just that it was just, it, you know, there's one of those moments where you realize this is the type of career I would love to have. And hopefully someday I can work towards that. But the one thing that was very interesting is that, you know, as I got into my senior year, so this is the fourth year, the match, there was a match and you have to wait for a few months. But I distinctly remember, and I'm sure I've talked to you about this, opening up the January issue of 94. And, you know, and ours was beige. I say ours, but it was beige. So you'd open it up. And I actually got back then, there was a resident, or I think there was, it's called an educational, you know, prescription or subscription you could get. So I paid for it as a student. And I wanted it, so I would get them. So they'd show up at the house and I'd open them up. And you'd usually, like, you know, at your level as a student, you'd flip through pages. But I'd go through the table of contents. I'd go through all the editor names just to see who these people were. Like, you don't know, right? You're just curious as a student to say, oh, I wonder how they got what they got. But then you'd always go to the current, back then it was the current concepts review. So you'd open up the current concepts review, and lo and behold, intracapsular fractures the femoral neck. Single author, Mark Swinkowski, said, I don't know who this person is, but I read it and I didn't understand some of it. Obviously, you're still trying to figure it all out, but it seemed like an authority had spoken about a very, very important topic. And I kind of reflect on that now, actually, Mark, and think about why that particular topic, because as you know, you and I ended up connecting some years later. You and I ended up doing some collaborative work, and hopefully we contributed to hip fracture treatment, you know, around the world, and hopefully we continue to have a passion for advocating. But why that paper and why that moment? And I kind of think that there were two things that were really important that were kind of helped me, guide me to where I would like to go, which is, one is the journal genuinely, in my mind, is a place where high impact research should be. So there was a gravitas around that topic. Just, it was big. And I thought, wow, this is a very big topic. And of course it would be in the journal. And it was also in many ways a place where there were individuals, scholars, scientists coming together to share that evidence. So it was also the people that was, you know, that were very, very, even if you don't know, and I suspect there's many, many students now who read the journal who are looking the same way that maybe you and I did. You look at that and you think, you know, I wonder who these people are, rather than just think, oh, well, I think you will see very clearly that that those individuals who participate in this particular journal are individuals who are in many ways making an impact. So the word impact just keeps sticking around.
Yeah.
But anyway, so fast forward, I ended up getting into McMaster University at that time, which usually is thought of anywhere in the world I go. It goes, oh, you're from Toronto. And I just gave up trying to explain that I'm from McMaster University and it's 45 minutes outside Toronto. So I've been a faculty at the University of Toronto for probably 30 years, according to many people, but actually I'm at McMaster University. I just don't correct people anymore. but that being said, I did that. And in many ways, just continued to, you know, to follow sort of that dictum, which is do your best work as best of your ability, collaborate with as many people as you can in our field, and try to get the message of important messages of orthopedics out, you know, as quickly as you can, and use vehicles and tools that will allow you to do so. So journals are a really important part of that. You know, I won't go on too much beyond this, but I would just say that it was like, I'm sure you're in the same environment, which is, it used to be JBJS journal clubs. Like when we would have a journal club at McMaster in my first year in 94, you would go as a student, and I'd go as a PGY1, and we would open up the journal table of contents, and, you know, one or two of our consultant surgeons would walk through those papers and we would have a discussion high level. And why didn't we go after anybody else? Just because if it was in the journal, it was an important thing to have read. And I think that's important with a lot of, I would say, flagship type journals, which is, if it's in the journal, it's important for an orthopedic surgeon to know. And I think you've said that to me recently many times. So that's been, you know, part of the story. And I think the story continues, but it's been absolutely wonderful getting to, you know, connect with you through all these years as well. So there's another 2 hours on that too, Mark, but I won't go into that.
Of course. Yeah, but a big part of it is, you know, the byline for the journal is excellence through peer review. And that something that Jim Heckman, I think, put in place. And it's really true that if you're an orthopedic researcher and you're willing to put your work out to peer review, which in our case is double blinded, and the journal goes through great expense to try to limit bias in decision making as to what we publish. But if you're willing to put yourself out there and it passes muster, it probably is worth reading. And I think we continue to provide, a stamp of quality for the orthopedic world in what we publish. And I'm just musing a little bit on our mutual interest on hip fractures. And I always like to recall the statement from Kellogg Speed, who was the president of the American College of Surgeons. It's my favorite quote in regards to how important the topic of hip fractures are. And it's, we enter the world under the brim of the pelvis and we exit through the neck of the femur. You and I have continuing to work in international trials in that area, which is an important public health problem. But I would just say that, you know, what I have tried to emphasize in my decade, and I'm going to ask you after this what your thoughts are and what you want to emphasize. But I guess number one for me has been to honor the authors and to provide an experience that is valuable to them. When you have an overall acceptance rate that hovers 18-19%, you got a lot of unhappy people. But I have felt that what we need to do is to get expert reviews that are high quality and do it in a timely fashion so that people can benefit from the review process, whether they're accepted, their work is accepted or not, so that they can improve it and move on to another publication home. So that's been something that I've really placed as a top priority. And I will just, again, return to the topic of double-blinded peer review and point out to the audience that my last three submissions to the journal were rejected, my personal submission. So there you have the... Now, maybe it's just poor quality work, but there you have it. That's what double-blind review will do. The second thing is to really try to do things to help advance orthopedic research in resource-challenged environments. There are a number of groups in the U.S. and Canada that are working collaboratively with places that are really low resource around the globe to try to improve the quality of research happening in low resource settings. And I'm very proud that the journal has really published a lot of work that I think is really, I guess, broadened our interest in global orthopedics. I think that's something I'm very proud of. And the last thing, and it's something that you're heavily involved with your travel schedule and your worldwide brand, if you will, is to travel widely around the globe and try to help educate the orthopedic scholarly community in ways to improve the quality of evidence on which we make treatment decisions. And I'm very pleased to see that the number of submissions from around the globe have increased and, you know, well over 50% now, not well over, but just slightly over 50% now come from outside the US and Canada. So that's very rewarding. So those are the things that I've kind of tried to emphasize. So now what do you have planned? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I'll just, if I could, just say a few words about, you know, how important I think your tenure has been, in my impression, to the journal. I mean, you know, you have represented, you know, as an editor in chief, the journal as the consummate professional surgeon scholar. And you know, I don't think we could have been in better hands. And I say we now proverbially. I feel like I'm part of the JBJS family, but I say that in that context. And the other thing I would say too, Mark, is that everything that you have had strong belief and valued in are all things that I think are important. You know, maintaining a quality process is really important. I think we're heading into this massive, you know, transitional period, and I think in humanity I'll use the word AI broadly, but it is a different time. And then I think, you know, there's going to be before and after AI and how it's used, but we're going to have to figure that out. And there's going to be some missteps, I'm sure, along the way. But for the most part, everyone is going to have to adapt to that. But you've brought us into this, you know, into this era very, very strong. You know, the area that we both fully agree upon has always been, you know, how do you make any journal's voice be a global voice, and you do that, but just as you've done, which is to, you know, be deliberate in ensuring diversity within the journal, diversity not just of people and geographies and gender, but also diversity of insights, diversity of perspectives, and you know, diversity of age. You know, there's so many ways in which we should be looking for opinions that aren't always similar to ours, so we can actually have an important debate. So, you know, that's, I think, an important place, you know, and you've made JBJS in many ways a global public square of evidence. So I think that's really important. And I think that would be something to its brand that, you know, it would be important to continue and move forward. This idea of, you know, impact, you know, there's metrics for impact, as you know, and then there's also just, you know, just this feeling that people have about a particular logo or brand. And so when you say JBJS, and, you know, as you said, you know, I travel a bit too. And so when you go around outside North America, it's very clear, right, that those four letters have a huge impact on the way our colleagues think of them. And I'm thinking broadly right now, just as the journal, you know, as the, quote, the flagship journal of bone and joint surgery, but, you know, the family that is becoming the family of journals that include a host of other areas, I think are important, right? Because they all come under the brand. When we think of other important brands in publishing, we think of the family of journals. So, and, you know, and the truth of the matter is, you know, rising tide raises all boats. So the goal is, if we can lift and maintain quality of process, quality of vision, global vision, if we can be creative, and creatives, you know, it's a broad term, but the point in my mind is we just have to be able to be flexible and think of new ideas. And then the action part of it is we have to decide which ideas you put into action. And if, okay, you make mistakes, you can take a step back and restart. But it's important, I think, especially now with so much change happening globally, that we're going to have to become idea generators and kind of figure out what we do with that. And for both of us, I think I have a little bit of anxiety leading without having some important data to guide us. Now, you don't always have data, but if we can use the information, and there's so much information at hand, if we can start using it, I think that'll be helpful too. And I say using it in the context of to help us make decisions. So data, not just for, you know, which trials are important and which evidence gaps there are, but also to your point, how do we help high potential centers around the world, or high potential investigators around the world, reach their full potential? As you know, you've traveled a lot, Mark. We've traveled some together. Aren't you just often just kind of just amazed by the quality of work that is being done? And what's missing in many ways is just a bit of process. You know, how do we work together to ensure that this idea with this keen number of investigators, you know, can see the light of day in a way that would be meaningful? And it's often small corrections. And the great thing about it is most investigative groups outside North America are, and in Europe too, are very, very keen to collaborate. We just have to find those pathways. But overall, I would just simply say that, you know, you always stay strong to the brand. You always stay strong to the people that are helping make that brand, from, you know, from everyone in central administration all the way up through the various, you know, roles, all the way from the board of trustees to the editorial board. And you work closely trying to come up with unified vision. The biggest challenge I've seen, and just when I look at, you know, my own life and various places I've been, is if we don't all understand where we're supposed to be going together, that's when problems or, you know, challenges happen. So it's really important to have some unification on a grand vision. And the good news is you've done just that. And so it makes it very easy, Mark, to be able to, and I say easy to be able to see the vision forward. Very, very hard to be able to walk into the shoes that you have, you know, moved along the way. So it's with a great deal of humility that I take on this role, but I know that you will be there now and in the future to be a huge mentor and support. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm definitely thankful for your kind words, and I will do whatever it takes to support your vision. And I know that the vision is going to be really exciting as you continue to immerse yourself in ice water and going 55 miles an hour down a mountain on a mountain bike and trying to hit a 300-yard drive on the golf course. So you have written extensively on work-life balance and how it relates to creativity, and I know there's going to be a lot of interesting ideas coming from you. So I really look forward to your leadership. One last thing I'd like you to comment on, because I'm sure there are some listeners who have a question. Obviously, Ortho Joe is a collaboration between the Journal and Ortho Evidence. So how are you going to manage your role with Ortho Evidence moving forward?
Point. Sure. And, you know, it's always Ortho Evidence is something I feel has been such an important part of where I've been able to get ideas and where I'm able to almost wouldn't say experiment, because that's too, you know, that's too extreme. I don't really experiment at Ortho Evidence. What we try to do is we try to understand the digital world. The good news is that we have had a fairly formal and fairly strong relationship with the journal for many years now. So I just hope to be able to bring more collaboration in those ways. At the end of the day, there will be lots of opportunity for us to be able to look at the digital side, some of the AI collaborations we can do together. And ultimately, what you want is you want to be able to bring the best information ultimately to the family. So I still actually think of Ortho Evidence as part of maybe a distant cousin of the JBJS family, but still a family member and shows up to all the big events, right? So I'm here. But, you know, on a point of Ortho Joe, you know, I think it's going to be, for me, really important that, you know, you and I continue to have these debates and discussions as we go forward. You know, titles are titles, but at the end of the day, it's about having, you know, and I do think you and I have in many ways agree, but in many ways we have slightly different viewpoints on life, more than slightly, I'm sure, in some areas. And so I think that's good to have that as we continue this journey together on Ortho Joe.
Yeah. One of those great differences is you try to hit a drive as hard and as far as you can. I'm just trying to hit a 200 and keep it in the fairway. So that's
yes, that is it's completely nonsensical what I do on the golf course, but that's neither here nor there. Usually by the fourth hole, people are saying, I don't know how he does it. He takes a quarter backswing. Nothing makes sense about this game. And the thing is, I can't be taught. I literally can't be taught. I just have to go with my gut on that one.
Well, I'm going to be honored to follow your gut as you lead the journal, and look forward to helping however I can. So thanks, and have a great rest of your day. And
you too.
And don't forget your cup of Joe.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Cheers.